Coming up on podcast 1121, Porsche are developing their own high-end EV battery technology. It's cutting edge, it's for motorsport and some top-end cars as well. Stick around, I got the details. Also on the show today, we'll go to France to look at how many EVs they're selling there. We'll look at Tesla's new supercomputer and why the US is still dependent on importing EV batteries. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you're listening around the world. Welcome to EV News Daily. It's Tuesday, 22nd of June, and my name is Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story so you don't have to. We look at the entire EV marketplace, bit of renewables, some battery stuff in here as well, rather than favouring one particular country or car maker. We try and sum it all up for you in a 20-minute podcast. We'll start with Volvo, owned by Geely. Of course, Polestar is their spin-off brand. And as we always say on this show, if you haven't got batteries, you haven't got EVs. And so many car makers for a long time now have been looking further up the supply chain to make sure that they've got their own supply of batteries. Because if you go to the market to try and do a deal and the price is wrong, you can't make a profit. Worst case scenario, you can't get the batteries. You are no longer a car company. So, Volvo have partnered with a fellow Swedish company. That company is Northvolt. And we've talked about them a fair bit because they've been doing deals with the likes of Volkswagen. And now they've done a deal with Volvo. This is for a whole new gigafactory somewhere in Europe. And the plant starts in 2026. So this is one of those long lead time stories that we bring you on the podcast. The first car, probably, we don't know, more likely to be something like the XC60, all electric by the middle of the decade when they start making cells. Says Luke Wilkinson at Auto Express, Volvo and Northvolt will break ground on the new facility next year, and peak capacity will be 50 gigawatt hours every single year. Now, if you take an average battery size of, well, it's just let's pick 75 kilowatt hours, because these are premium cars. Volvos are not small cars. And so that's probably about right. Now, I know that EV battery technology is getting better, more efficient. The battery pack sizes can, in theory, get smaller for the same amount of miles. But let's just say, in your average Polestar 75 kilowatt hour pack, well, 50 gigawatt hours a year is enough for well over 660,000 cars every single year, and all supplied from this factory. You won't be surprised to hear they're looking at Sweden. They want to put it near Volvo's production lines and their assembly plants because, well, they say to cut down CO2 emissions on transporting, but they could say, well, we're going to use electric trucks, in which case CO2 wouldn't be an issue. The point is, make the cells near where you're assembling the vehicles and it makes your life a lot easier. The battery plant will create around 3,000 jobs in Sweden and run on 100% pure electric green power. I'll pop a link to Auto Express in the show notes if you want to read more. Next, let's go to France and look at plug-in sales there. Inside EVs have their sales scorecard. 25,175 new plug-ins were registered last month in May. That's about 17.3% of the entire car market. That's mega. You know, we give all the praise to the countries like Norway because they're just shooting ahead. But for a country like France, to have almost a fifth of new car sales a plug socket on, that is mega. 11,500 pure BEVs and 13,000 plug-in hybrids. Between them, like I say, over 17% of the new car share. Which cars did well? Well, the Renault Zoe. I know it well. I've known two of them well. The Zoe has gone back up to the top spot after a couple of slow months, the bestseller in May. Model 3 was the second bestseller, which is surprising because we had no ships, so that was inventory. We have got some ships, one from China, one from Fremont, if not already docked, then close to be here by the end of the month. The end of quarter pushes on from Tesla, and the Model 3 does remain the top-selling car in France year-to-date, with 8,000 registrations smoothing out those month-to-month fluctuations. Tesla Model 3 still doing very well. Pop a link in the show notes if you want to read more. Right, headline story today, and an Autoblog exclusive, because they got to do a roundtable interview with Michael Steiner, the head of Porsche's R&D, and they have announced a joint venture, and they've called it Cellforce. Now, Porsche themselves are going to be designing and manufacturing battery cells for high-performance race cars and maybe some high-end racing-inspired actual production vehicles. Now, they're working on battery cells that have a silicon anode material, a solution which will allow Porsche's engineers to boost the battery power density and in turn decrease the overall size and weight. And that is good for race cars because it's all about adding lightness. And so you want to make sure that you get that battery pack as light as possible. The new chemistry reduces battery's internal resistance as well. And you know, that means you can pump more power into it. So we're talking about race cars with all electric power, with more energy storage, taking less time to charge. I'm not saying pit stops are going to be coming back to rival F1, but it doesn't perform well in freezing temperatures. Therefore, this is designed for the racetrack, and it's not designed for years and years of use. Every race car, every part, every nut, bolt and washer on a race car, a front wing, an engine, has a lifetime, and sometimes it'll be one race or one practice session. Sometimes it'll be the entire season. And so these cells are not designed to last for years and years, and it's interesting that a company like Porsche is spending tens of millions of euros investing in this when they can't use this technology immediately in their road cars. So they're not playing the short game here. They are. It's great that VW Group are giving Porsche the investment, the money, the time, the space to do this. And so many people tell me the only car company in the world with a battery advantage is Tesla, and don't get me wrong, they are far and away in out front in many ways. But there are others doing this work. They just never get the attention, which is kind of the point of me making this podcast, to say there's lots of stuff happening around the world. It's not just Tesla. Now, Michael Steiner, like I say, said this, and I quote, "It'll be a small plant, a small cell plant they're making compared to all the gigafactories, looking at 100 megawatt hours of cells a year of production capacity. It could be more, but in terms of cars, that's about 1,000 race cars a year." Now, Germany's federal government and the state of Baden-Württemberg, hopefully I have that correct, have chipped in 60 million euros to the project. In exchange, the factory, of course, will be somewhere in southern Germany, providing jobs and very, very high-tech investment. And you never know, this silicon anode technology could work its way through to road cars at some point in the future. And we love, love, love stories like that. Moving on. Motor One are talking about the Model S and the Model S Plaid, that's the extremely bonkers one, configurator, and it indicates that the Plaid top speed of 200 miles an hour is not achievable unless Tesla unlock it, and to unlock it you need proper wheels and tyres. Those are coming in full. But then there's weirdness. Now, we know Motor Trend have had a car from Tesla, an official car that they gave them to test and do 0 to 60 runs. Motor Trend say that the Model S Plaid has already, shipping with it, the 21-inch wheels and tyres that will go 200 miles an hour. To reach 200 miles an hour, the Plaid buyers with the 21-inch arachnid wheels have the Michelin Pilot Sport 4S tyres, and Tesla saying that that combination is validated for 200. So why won't it do it? If you buy one now, and I'm aware that there's nobody listening spending 130 grand on the Model S Plaid, if you buy one now, it will only do 163 miles an hour, that's 262 kph, because Tesla haven't unlocked it. What they will unlock is a software package, according to Motor Trend. Well, this just gets weirder and weirder by the day. The design studio, Tesla's website, says you need the special tyres and wheels to do the speed. They gave a car to Motor Trend and told them, oh, no, these Michelin Pilot Sport 4Ss, they'll do it, they're fine. We've just got to unlock it with a software update. So, is it the tyres or is it not? Because the website says it is. And they're telling others, no, the tyres are good. We've got to do some stuff first. So what is that unlocking? Motor technology? Battery technology? What is it? Because what they're saying online doesn't match up with that. Hey, look, in a way this is all mood juice, because how many people are really going to do more than 163 miles an hour? Certainly not on public roads, and it's just interesting to talk about. Interesting why they didn't feel like they wanted to make a quad motor version of the Plaid. Motor Trend had something to say about that as well. They were talking to Tesla when they got the car, because Tesla accompanied them to the test track, and I think, you know, they were handlers, as it were, looking over their shoulder. Motor Trend said that their source at Tesla said they simply didn't feel the need to add a fourth motor onto the Plaid version. It's a three motor, of course, if you didn't know, but it would fit if they wanted to on the front axle, but it would reduce size in the frunk and the car would be less efficient. So you're starting to lose range already, less than 350 miles, a big hit on range already. So that would go down with four motors, and it would add cost and it would add complexity, and they pointed out they're now at the limits of physics. You know, going 0 to 60 in 2 seconds, or less than 2 seconds, you know, adding a fourth motor from a third doesn't change the game, so they chose not to. I'll pop a link to that in the show notes. Let's talk about Tesla's big old computer. Tesla unveiling their new supercomputer, which is already in operation, by the way. We just saw a picture of it. They claim it's the fifth most powerful supercomputer in the world. And this is even before their new Dojo supercomputer is switched on. Elon Musk has been teasing the Dojo project, which is going to be the, you know, their mothership for full self-driving. That'll be a supercomputer capable of an exaflop, one quintillion floating point operations a second, or 1,000 petaflops. But for now, they have a smaller one. And this is only the fifth biggest one in the world. Says Electrek today, electrek.co. The company has developed other supercomputers on the way to Dojo. Andre Kapathy, Tesla's head of AI, has unveiled the latest one, a picture. He's put a picture on a presentation, on a PowerPoint presentation of the supercomputer they've built. And it is a big one, by all accounts. And I don't understand the debate going on, because I've seen some computer science experts saying, yes, but this is at FP16, and it's not at FP something else, and so it's not really 1,800 so-and-so flops. It's actually only 120, which is a lot less. But and then there other people are coming in on Twitter thread saying, yes, but that is okay for Tesla's what they've built this for. Hey, you know, one way or the other, the point of the story for me, not being an AI expert, is that Tesla is so much more than a car company, and actually, I don't know how many other car companies have, whether this is the fifth or the seventh or the tenth biggest computer in the world. They're arguing it out online now. But either way, it shows the breadth of their business and the depth of what they're doing to create that driver assistance system with full self-driving, and a lot of investment going into that as well. So very, very impressive. And obviously, you know, they're a Silicon Valley company first and foremost. And I still have Elon Musk's voice ringing in my head from his presentation on the June the 10th, where he said all input is error. And that just really, that crystallized it for me. Yeah, if you're a Silicon Valley company, you want to automate everything. And yeah, input for them, if a human being has to do something, an input, that is error. Now, that is the opposite of what I want from a car. I love driving. I don't want to be taken out of the driving experience. For me, input is pleasure. Input is fun. Input is driving. But I'm like, ah, of course. Like, Tesla's philosophy is anything that you're doing, if you're walking up to the car and pulling a handle or pressing a button to unlock or pressing the start button, that's all error. I'm like, ah, right. I'm a car guy. I love driving EVs. But they're a Silicon Valley company, and they just want to push that technology forward. I get it. Right. So this dovetails perfectly with that. They are just a massive tech company, and a car company, and a solar company, and an energy company. Final Tesla story today. We are looking at AI Day, and Elon Musk has tweeted yesterday on June 21st. He says, looking at holding Tesla AI Day in about a month or so, we'll go over progress with AI software and hardware, both training and inference. Purpose is recruiting. So there you go. Elon Musk says they're going to have an AI day in a month or so. As always, you know, you might not get the advertised mileage with what he tweets. So we'll wait. You know, if it happens, it's great. But he said back in January, oh, we'll have a call about the new Plaid versions. And we're still waiting for that. So, you know, it may happen, it may not. He might just have been, you know, tweeting stuff. I'd love to know more about their plans and pretend to understand it. Let's talk about the story that we're talking about with the United States heavily depending on Chinese EV batteries and importing all various sorts of batteries, actually. The Korea International Trade Association announcing 2 days ago, June 20th, that the United States imported $2.37 billion worth of lithium-ion batteries in the first 4 months of the year, up 71% from a year ago, and imports from China, 51% of the total imports for the period. Now, this coming from businesskorea.co.kr, last year's decrease from 50% was because the United States imported more Korean batteries, some SKI and the others as well. Samsung they imported, LG they imported from Hungary, Malaysia and Poland respectively. At present, some companies like LG and Panasonic are manufacturing lithium-ion batteries in the US, but the supply within the US, if you're not talking about Tesla's Gigafactory in Nevada, it is highly insufficient. And whilst China leads the world in gigafactories and big investment in Europe, we're desperately catching up, there's a big job to do in the US, and that's why Biden has been banging the drum for batteries over the last few months. I think his advisors and top energy people in US government can see unless there's a domestic supply, the US will be importing batteries as it imports other energy sources right now. And that is not getting closer to the dream of energy independence, of cutting the umbilical cord to other parts of the world and relying on them for energy. Next, construction beginning in Spain on their first gigafactory. Well, we talk about batteries of gold right now. The battery cell plant that they're building in the Noblejas municipality in the province of Toledo in Spain's central region of Castilla-La Mancha will be operational this year. The company announcing the project for the manufacturing facility back in March. The construction of the two factories they're building there were requiring about 1 billion euros worth of investment, about 1,600 direct jobs, and about 20 gigawatt hours of annual production in that one by 2027. Goes into operation though from early 2023, and they're going to ramp up with their battery supply or battery output from that gigafactory, and that one's going to be in Spain. I love it. More battery news. It's positive, you know, they're coming, and that means EVs are coming, and that is a good thing. Final story on the podcast today, and it's about how younger people are getting into driving EVs. Millennials, the biggest consumer group, are a little bit adverse to buying things. They like to subscribe to Netflix and Spotify and Apple Music, etc. And that's largely because younger people can't always afford to own or have the responsibilities that come with ownership. Now, again, I'm at a different stage of my life. I'm early 40s, and so I probably wouldn't go down that route, but I understand why younger people are thinking, well, I'm never going to buy a house because it's too expensive. I'm never going to buy a car. And so they live for the moment, the weekend, the travel on the long weekend to take the perfect Instagram photo for their social media profile. I know I'm not tarring all millennials with that brush, but there is largely a trend with cars that younger people don't mind long-term rental or subscription. Now, when Face Drive acquired a DC-based company called Steer last year, it was with that trend in mind. Steer is a flexible, hassle-free, all-inclusive, monthly car subscription service. 100% electric cars and or plug-ins. Steer doesn't mean that you have the car for only a few days. It's a more kind of long-term subscription than that. But they cover insurance, they cover there's no financing, obviously, because you're renting the thing. No mileage limits, which is interesting. And no more long-term commitments. 70% of Steer's members have never driven an EV before, but that's what they go for. That's a percentage of new converts that a car dealership at the moment can't dream of. You know, 70% of people walking onto a car dealer's lot and not walking away with an electric car. So lots of work to do there with dealerships and to help them understand EVs and the consumers as well, because they'll be coming in to renew the lease on their petrol or diesel car and to persuade them to an EV, if it's the right thing for them, and it might not be, is, you know, it's a big job. Whereas younger people do their own research, want to subscribe to a car and are using services like this in DC to subscribe to a car. Super interesting. I'd love to know your thoughts on that. Of course, you can email me about that and anything else around the world of EVs as we all learn on this journey about, you know, what's happening in the world of cars and batteries and renewables. You can email me hello@evnewsdaily.com. Question of the week with emobilitynorway.com. Same email for that. What's the best way to navigate an EV journey and charge on the way? Do you use a smartphone? Do you use the car's internal mapping system? Is it good enough, or do you prefer to plan it all out in advance? Email me your thoughts. I'll read them out on Sunday. It's hello@evnewsdaily.com. Well, thank you so much to our premium partners of the podcast. That'll be you, Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Porsche of The Village in Cincinnati, Audi there in Cincinnati East, and Volvo Cars also of Cincinnati East. Now, hi to the guys at nationalcarcharging.com and alohacharge.com, putting in that excellent hardware solutions that they do. Derek Riley making those YouTube videos at the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel. Hi to Richard at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling electric vehicles in the UK. And of course, emobilitynorway.com. Have a good one. See you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.